Welcome to the News Director's Office. I'm Rich DeMuro, tech reporter at KTLA Channel 5 News in Los Angeles, filling in for my boss, Jason Ball, who is on vacation. Thanks so much for listening to the show. I've got a great guest today. Leo Laporte has been a tech fixture for decades. He runs the internet, TV, and podcasting powerhouse Twit out of Northern California. He also does a syndicated radio show around the nation talking about technology, which you can listen to right here on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles. Leo Laporte, welcome to the News Director's Office.
Rich, Jason just called and he said you are not to use the world's greatest boss mug on his desk, okay?
You know, that's funny. He wouldn't let me record the show in his office. He said you could do the show, just
but not in my
desk. In my office. But someone else did do the show in his office, so now I'm mad. Leo, you've probably had news directors over the years, right? Because now you are sort of the boss. But in the past, you had news directors, right?
You know, it's funny. I never worked in the news division technically. I've always been a talk show host, but that's usually under a program director. Occasionally, there's a program director who's a news director as well. But of course, I've always worked closely with news directors. And frankly, if you give me the choice between a program director and a news director, I'll probably choose the news director.
Interesting. So I guess at radio, it's kind of a program
director.
It's a little
different.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
See, I've never worked at a radio station specifically.
You should understand, radio's for people who aren't good enough to get into TV. You know, it's kind of like second-class citizens.
You know that's not true. You know that's not true. And now, look at this. I work at a TV station, and, you know, the podcasting, like, we're doing podcasts here at TV stations, and across the nation, they're all starting to do podcasts, right? For some reason, Leo, everyone just sort of discovered podcasting for the first time in, 2018, right?
It cracks me up. I'm in my 15th year of podcasting.
And you're still explaining to people what it is, right?
Yeah, for a long time. Well, first of all, what's an iPod? I mean, unless you're over a certain age, you don't even know what an iPod. So what's podcast? I knew it when we named it podcast that this was a bad idea, but I couldn't get anybody to change the name. I wanted to call them netcasts because, well, it's a pun, right? It's on the net. It's on the internet. It's not on your iPod. It's on the internet. And you're casting a net. So I thought that was, I thought that was really smart. But this was 2004 and Nobody listened to me. Everybody knew what an iPod was at the time.
It's kind of interesting. I never really thought about the fact that podcast is sort of linked to Apple and the original iPod.
I didn't like that. I didn't want it to be an Apple thing.
It's like saying I'm gonna iMessage you instead of text message you, right?
Yeah, or Xerox you. Yeah,
or here's a Kleenex.
Yes, exactly. In fact, Apple famously sued a couple of people who used the word pod in their podcast. They backed off after a revolt from the entire podcast industry, all 12 of us. But it made me very nervous at the time. I thought, we're using a trademark. We shouldn't be.
Yeah, proprietary eponym. Leo, where were you
born?
Wow,
thank you for the big word there.
It's the only one I know.
Proprietary eponym yourself.
Where were you born, Leo? That's what I want to know.
I was born in a small town on the East Coast called New York City.
So you are from New York. That is so rare.
I'm from New York in the sense that I lived there for the first few years of my life. My dad was a graduate student at Columbia, but then he got a job teaching at Brown. So we moved to Providence and I had to get a new accent. It was very hard for me at the age of 3. I had just learned English. But most of my early formative years were in Providence, Rhode Island, home of the U.S. Mafia. And then in high school, moved to California, to Santa Cruz. And I got a load of Santa Cruz, and I never went back. I said, this is it, the Golden State for me.
Yeah, California is tough to tough to compare to the East Coast because, you know, I grew up in New Jersey, and I came to California, and it's like...
Oh, yeah, so you're an Easterner.
Yeah,
you know.
Well,
yeah.
It's tough. I mean, it's just like you get the best weather you've ever experienced in your life and kind of,
climate's
you know,
perfect.
It's pretty nice.
No snow. Yeah.
So dad moved around for work was in university, I'm guessing.
Yeah. He was a professor at Brown for, I don't know what that is, 12 years or so. And then, I guess I was 15 when we moved, 14 or 15. And we moved to Santa Cruz where he was a professor at UC Santa Cruz. And, I went to college back east because I thought, well, you know, maybe I still like it. And I found out I don't. And I came right back to California, scuttled back and started in radio in Monterey.
It's Monterey, California. And what? How did you get that job?
Oh, man, that was hard. That first job is, I have adult kids now who are getting their first jobs. And I feel for them. It's hard, especially in radio, because in those days, unlike podcasting, today I just would have made a podcast. That'd be it. But in those days, you had to persuade somebody who had enough money to buy a radio license and a transmitter and a tower and a facility to put you on the air, which wasn't easy, especially coming from college radio. I thought, oh, you know, I ran the college radio station and a lot of on-air experience. They said, you have zero experience. And I went, and I just went to every station. And mainly the way I got the job is I went to the smallest, junkiest, worst station I could find, which was a little tiny station in an old brothel on Cannery Row. And even then, the guy said, Leo, you're a diamond in the rough, but we're going to polish you up, and we're going to start you at midnight on Sunday morning.
Oh, wow.
I did one shift a week, midnight to 6 a.m. Sunday, and it was I played religious services for the first 4 or 5 hours, and then got the big primetime morning drive slot, 4 to 6 a.m. Sunday morning. But at least I was in radio, man. I was so happy.
A lot of people commuting during that time.
Yeah. I guess, you know, I kind of knew it wasn't a big station with a big audience. One night I was running a religious service in there. They were on reel-to-reel tapes. And I was not getting a little sleepy. So I lay down on the carpet. And when I woke up, I heard nothing on the air. I don't know how long the tape had been running. In radio, the cardinal sin is dead air. Dead air. For how long? I looked up, the phone wasn't ringing. Nobody even noticed.
Oh, wow.
I put another tape on, went back to sleep. That was a little depressing. But that's, not even the program director did not call.
But that's the beauty of a small market, is that you learn, you make your mistakes, and that's kind of what it's all about, right?
That's different now, and I feel bad for kids who are starting on podcasts or YouTube. They were starting, in effect, with a national audience, a global audience. So mistakes are amplified, and you know those YouTube videos never die. So in a way it was good that I could start, because I was terrible for years. I mean, really terrible for years. And it was good that nobody knew. My mom knew. My mom was so diplomatic. She would say, "Oh, Leo, you sound like you're on helium. You're so bouncy." And it's because I was talking like this.
You had your radio voice.
In radio, that's how you had to talk. I'd listen to Casey Kasem. I thought everybody talked like that.
So Casey Kasem, was that one of your role models growing up?
Yeah. And I remember when I was in college, waking up early to look, because I didn't have to get up early. I was a college student, but I had got up early to listen to Dine Imus on WNBC. And that guy, I just looked up to him. I thought he is the best radio guy I ever heard. And then he'd say the time. Every time he said the time, he'd play a duck sound. 53 degrees, it's 7:04 in the morning. WNBC. And that's basically, I copied him for years. I still think I'm copying him. Do you hear a duck in the background?
I heard you on your podcast over the weekend, or on your radio show. You were playing with the old soundboard.
Sound effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were having fun.
I have
with that
one. I am informed by all and sundry, including the news director and program director, not to use it.
It's funny how people are so against those. I did that when I was doing my podcast. I got a new board, and I, you know, for me, I grew up kind of like loving radio as well.
Right.
And I love the little sound effects. That's part of the fun of radio, right?
Right.
You know, you say something stupid, it's the clown sound, whatever.
and when I was young, I listened in San Francisco radio to Dr. Donald T. Rose, and he had all sorts of sound effects. That's right, doctor. And sorts of weird stuff. That's
right.
I think you should move this into the news director's office. Jason needs this for his show.
He'd never use it.
Ding dong.
He's going to tell me, don't ever
arrived.
Use that.
Look at our guest is here. Leo Laporte's at the door.
Yeah.
When I first started doing TV at Tech TV, I thought I had this brilliant idea, because it was a tech channel, that we would be in a garage. And that when a guest would arrive, I'd take the garage door opener, and the door would open the garage door, and the guy, you know, Steve Wozniak, would come walking through the garage door. They wouldn't let me do that either.
I love it.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Now you're getting ahead of yourself because
I'm still in radio now. Yes.
Yes. So you're still in radio. I want to get to tech TV because that was my dream job back in the day, by the way. But we'll get to that in a moment. So you were on the radio, and so you go from the small station in Monterey to where?
Oh man, you know, in radio, I don't know if it's still true. Probably is. You work your way up through the markets. So Monterey was what we call a small market. And then I had my eyes set on a medium market, which was San Jose, California, and a station that was it's no longer there, but it was called Clock, K-L-O-K. And I remember desperately trying. I sent tapes. I called the guy who was kind of a radio legend, Bill Weaver. He had invented oldies radio. I don't know why I wanted to work in oldies. You know, it's funny about oldies. When I was doing this, the oldies were 20 years old. 30 years later, they're 50 years old. They haven't, they're same oldies.
So the same oldies hasn't changed.
Shouldn't oldies be from now the 90s and the 2000s? They shouldn't be from the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, it's like locked in time.
It is. Amber. So anyway, I called Bill and finally he gave me, and this is always the case, you start with a weekend slot. Actually, I quit my radio job in Monterey, which you're never supposed to do. You're always supposed to get another job, then quit. But I got kind of fed up because they went from being a format where I could talk to a format where I read liners. Now, you've worked in radio, haven't you? I think you know what a liner is. They give you a sheet of paper that says, you know, whatever you're supposed to say, and you read it. No personality, nothing, that you read at an exact time. Basically, you're a robot. It's something now a robot would do, but at the time they didn't have robots. So humans had to do this job, and I did it for a week, and I hated it so much that I just quit. I said, walked out the door and just crossed my fingers that I would get a job in San Jose, which I was lucky I did. Worked my way up to full-time in San Jose. That's what you do. You start weekends, then you get a midday show, then maybe if you're lucky, you'll get a drive-time show. I did. And then they Clock bought a station in San Francisco, and that's how I made the leap to the big market.
Wow.
By the way, if you're in a big market, you have to talk like this. You can't talk like, you have to talk down to be a big market DJ. So that's, and then I got a job at KNBR, which is a great station, legendary station. NBC owned and operated, and I worked there. And then I've worked pretty much all over the market in San Francisco, KSFO, which another legendary station, KGO, which at the time was the number one station, not only in Northern California, I think in much of the country. And that's where I met, by the way, a woman named Robin Bertolucci, who ended up being my boss at KFI down here in LA.
Right. And she's
there. So that's what happens. You know, you
meet people and you build those relationships and they pay off. So now at this point, you were not talking about technology, or were you?
So the transition happened in the early 90s. I was working at KNBR. They were an all sports station, and they decided to replace my midday show with this new kid coming up from Sacramento. Everybody was crazy about him. This guy, a little guy named Rush Limbaugh. And they took my show and they gave it to Rush, which was, as it turned out, a very good move. But that left me kind of wandering around. They said, well, you can do weekends. And that meant a big step down, right? Weekends is where you start. But also meant I was going to be doing a car show. I was going to do a real estate show, a food show, a wine show, a fitness show. And I said, hey, if I'm going to do all these shows, real estate show, if I'm going to do all these shows, and I was the announcer. They'd have an expert, but I would be like the radio guy and the expert would come in. And if I'm going to do all these shows, can I do a computer show? And they said, this is 1991. Nobody's going to listen to a computer show. I said, but yeah, I know, but it just, as a favor, can I just have 2 hours out of the 18 hours a weekend you'll be working me, 2 9-hour shifts? Can I have 2 hours to do computers? I knew this guy. I'd had him on my show. It was a computer columnist, very well known at the time, John C. Dvorak. And I said, I think you can get Dvorak to do a show with me. And the program director, Bob Agnew, relented. He said, okay, all right, Leo, poor guy, you're doing this 18-hour shift. I'll let you do that. And we ended up, you know, that worked out pretty well. People were kind of interested in computers in the early 90s. The internet was coming along a few years later. We syndicated the show. And eventually I stopped doing any other kind of talk radio, which is a good thing because I was terrible at it, and started doing nothing but computer talk radio. That was 92 or 93, I think.
And people liked it because, you know, you're in San Jose or San Francisco.
Yeah, we're still in Silicon Valley, right?
Yeah. You're in the area where it's hot.
It was still early days. You know, it was Windows. When we started doing it, it was Windows 3.1. It was DOS 6. The Mac was out, but it was Mac OS, probably OS 7. Mac System 7 it was called. So it was early days. And really, nobody was on the internet. The internet existed, but nobody knew how to use it. That started around 94. And actually, that's really when the show started taking off, because people wanted to know, what is this internet? How do I get on it?
Oh, yeah.
It was a little complicated at the time. You had to download software and do all this stuff. So there was, it turned out I picked a good time to get into the technology business.
I remember when I had AOL back in the day. This is in high school, by the way, for me. And I will never forget, I heard about this thing called the internet. And I had AOL at the time, right? Like everyone else in America did. But I remember there was one section of AOL, like keyword internet or www or something, where it would bring you to a landing page that said, coming soon, the internet.
The internet.
And I would check it like every day. I'm like, I can't wait to get on this thing called the internet. I don't know what it is, but I can't wait.
Blinky lights around it.
Yep. And it
that was, actually, yeah. It was 94 and 95, and it is remembered to this day by internet old timers as the day the internet broke, because everybody else got to be on it. It was ours, all ours, until you AOL people came along. And that changed. It really did start to change everything at that point.
Changed everything.
Yeah, it became a public service instead of just a place geeks could, you know, figure out and hang out at.
So you're doing the show, you're kind of getting into your groove, you're kind of realizing this is my future, this is what I'm going to talk about for the rest of my life. When did Tech TV come along?
I still haven't decided that part. Really? The rest of my life?
I don't know. I think you're well established, Leo.
I'm stuck now.
I don't think you're going to switch to sports talk at this point.
Well, I was thinking gardening, maybe. Okay. I don't know. Okay, stuck. Shoot. I did not like doing political talk, even back then. Regular talk radio, I'd go home with a stomach ache. You know, it's just fussing and fighting. And I couldn't do it. It just took a chunk out of me. And the nice thing about talking about technology, it's kind of like the toy store, but it's not unimportant. I mean, it is, you're talking about something that's important to people and it's changing their lives, but it's not like you don't have big debates and disputes. At least you didn't back then, and we're starting to get to that. But at the time, it wasn't very political. It was just fun. It was a toy store. So I really dug it. And I do feel like my timing was good. Round about 94, all this time while I'm doing the radio, because it's only the weekends, right? I got Monday through Friday. I'm not doing anything. I kind of tried to learn how to do a little TV. And I did some stuff for a local Channel 4 up here in San Francisco, KRON. And did some stuff for public broadcasting and did a show called, get ready for this, Internet! Exclamation mark.
Ooh, I like
that. You have to say it like that. Internet!
Internet!
It's not internet. Internet!
Internet!
Anyway, sorry. So I did that for a while. It was fun. And I think I learned a little bit about how television production and how to do on-camera stuff. And really, radio is a very good training ground for that. You know, it's like you learn how to use your voice, learn how to talk, learn how to communicate, and then you could start worrying about pictures. And around, that was 94 or 95, I'd done some work for a company you might have heard of called CNET.
Yes.
In fact, I know you're an old CNET old timer, but I was before your time. It was the guy who started CNET, Halsey Miner, who was a hedge fund manager out of Virginia, and his buddy Shelby Bonney decided, you know, the next big thing is computers. This is in the early 90s also. And we're going to start a 24-hour cable channel on computers. Who could we talk to about that? And I was doing a national radio show about computers. I was probably the only guy doing that at the time. So they called me and they hired me. I was the fourth employee. And they said, okay, job one, how do you start a cable channel? They had no idea. They were finance guys. So I looked into it and I said, well, you can do it, but it's going to cost you. How much is it going to cost us? It's going to cost you, you know, about $500 million, because I looked at CNN. It took them spent $50 million a year in losses for 10 years before they turned profitable.
Wow.
$500 million. And Halsey said, yeah, we're not going to do that. And that's when they pivoted to doing a website. And of course, later they did do TV in support of a website. I know that's where you worked. And it was a good way for them to promote the website. But CNET really made its money on the web. I think you probably knew that, unless I'm telling you something you didn't know yet.
Well, as I understood, they did. They started website, then they got into TV, right? Or they
always wanted to. They knew they couldn't do a cable channel, so they did some shows.
They did shows, right? Okay, yeah. And then when I got there, they were.
But this the net and CNET was supposed to be a television network.
Right. Right.
But so I talked them out of it. And then they fired me. By the way, I didn't mention the last part.
Why did Halsey they fire said, you?
Well, Halsey said. We're going for another round of investment. If you could give us $10,000, you could have whatever it was, a tenth of the business. And I said, you know, I just bought a house. I don't know. So this was about one of many really stupid moves on my part. At some point, he and you know, Halsey was one of those guys. I don't know how well you knew him, but he was. And you can cut this out if you don't want anybody to know it. But he was a little odd. And he's one of those guys who was hot and cold. He loved you and then he hated you. And so I went from love to hate. And the way he fired me, I didn't hear from him for months. They called me into his office. This is when they were down in San Francisco on the waterfront. He was in an old railroad caboose. Do you remember that office?
No. Mm-mm.
He was in an old railroad caboose on the waterfront. Nice office. He called me in. He didn't say you're fired. He said, hey, I just got a press release from Ziff Davis, which is a big magazine publisher. They did PC Magazine. They're looking for somebody. Why don't you go over there? That was how he fired me.
That's suggestive.
but you know what? This is a lesson for anybody who wants to be a broadcaster. You got to put up with a lot of that. So in fact, my life is full of stories like that. So what I did, I went over there and they said, hey, we do want to do TV. Come over and work for us. I worked for him for a few years doing treatments, which is what you write up when you have a show idea. You write a treatment. And eventually, I think it was Christmas 94, they called up and they said, hurry, NBC is doing a deal with Microsoft to create a new channel. They're going to call it MS for Microsoft, NBC for NBC, and they want a daily tech show. And we need a treatment. They came to us. So I had a lot of experience writing treatments. So I wrote a treatment for a show, and we went and we presented it. We went to 30 Rock, went all the way up to the top floor, and the president of NBC News at the time, he's back, Andy Lack, came in the room. He was wearing a three-piece suit and cowboy boots. I'll never forget that because he put his cowboy boots up on the table, crossed his legs, put them up on the table, and said, all right, what do you got?
Wow, cowboy in New York City.
Cowboy in New York City in a three-piece suit and no hat. He was all boots, no cattle. We pitched the show to him. And at the end of it, he said, why don't my people bring me anything like that? Green light. He greenlit it, which, as it turned out, I think was only because this was just as a sop to Microsoft. They were putting in hundreds of millions of dollars, and we got to do something.
Right.
So that we produced in San Francisco. Soledad O'Brien was the anchor. She was an up-and-coming TV star from Channel 4, Cron, in San Francisco. And they hired me. At first, I was going to be the managing editor, which, as in television, that's a pretty good job in a TV daily TV news show. The managing editor, mm-hmm. I'm thinking, I'm the Morley Safer of tech. I'm Mike Wallace, baby. And then the NBC vice president comes in, David Borman. By the way, this goes full circle because David Borman later produced Don Imus's TV show. You might remember Don Imus was on TV for a while.
Yep,
and Imus. Would make fun of Borman, calling him Moose Butt Borman. So it kind of all comes around. So I'm going to call him Moose Butt because Moose Butt comes in and says, come here, Leah. I got to talk. Come into my office, closes the door. That's when you know you're in trouble.
Yeah, when they close the news director's office door.
Yeah. Yeah, he was the VP news at NBC. This is a news director on steroids.
Yeah.
Never forget him because this was, and remember, at 94, cell phones were brand new. And he had a cell phone from Sony so small you could swallow it. Because at the time, for a while, the hot thing was have a giant watch and a tiny cell phone. That do you remember that? Do you remember those days?
I remember the tiny cell phone. Like it was like a Sony Ericsson, like that one.
It was so small. This guy's a big guy, Moose Butt, right? He would hold it with two fingers in a little pincher thing to his ear. It looked like he was talking into a teacup. I don't know what – it was not a good look. Anyway – he's off the phone. He hangs up the teacup and says, Leo, I've been on the line to the network, New York. Leo Laporte, I'm going to tell you one word they had for you. Ugh.
Oh, wow.
Ich was the word. I didn't ask him how to spell it. I got the message. He said, they don't want you on the air. You're no longer managing editor. You're going to be, we're going to call you technical managing editor. I said, oh, that sounds good. What is that? He said, well, that means you read the scripts and look for mistakes. Okay. Thanks, boss.
Oh, wow.
So I look cool. Eventually they did let me on the air. In fact, I think he felt so bad. He said, look, we got something for you. We're going to do, it'd be never been done in primetime. It's never been done ever on TV, a real time animated character. Soledad O'Brien, a human being, our anchor, is going to sit at a coffee bar, stare at a green dot on the wall. You are going to be Dev Null, the virtual reality barista. It'll look like on TV she's talking to you, but you'll be in another room in a padded, literally a padded room, wearing a rubber suit with sensors on it. And it in real time, it animated my character. And I talked like that. I had a kind of cartoon character voice. But I got my revenge because the show was called The Site. And it was on MSNBC for 18 months. It got put on a permanent hiatus after Princess Diana died. And MSNBC realized, wait a minute, news is bigger than a daily, nightly tech news show. And just, you know, never brought it back. But in all that time, The Site won one Emmy Award. And it was me, Dev Null, the special effects character. So I got my revenge. They thought, we're going to put you in the ghetto of this. Nobody will even know who you are. You're in a suit in the back. But I got the Emmy Award. And that led to then Ziff Davis, who had been producing the show for them, saying, we want to do a 24-hour cable channel, which brought back chilling memories of my conversation with Halsey Miner. And they said, how many hours can you fill? And I said, well, at the time I'm doing this call-in radio show. I said, well, I do 4-hour call-in radio show. I guess I could do, you know, 4 hours a day. Yeah. Okay. We're going to divide it into two shows because 4 hours of one show is too much. You'll do two shows a day.
Right.
One will be call for help, which is people calling to ask Leo questions. The other will be screensavers, which is people calling to ask Leo questions. The difference is, on one show, you're going to wear sweater vests. On the other show, you're going to wear Hawaiian shirts. And probably the television audience will think it's two different people.
Get out of here.
I said, well, all right, I'll do this. Okay, yeah, they had very different looks. As if you remember the shows, they were both really the same principle. But I said, I'll do this. But here's what we'll do. We'll say the call for help. See, I had this theory at the time. There's two, and this was true, I think, at the time, less so now. But at the time, people who came to computers in the mid-90s came in one of two ways. They either came because they had to use it at work. It was a tool for them, right, like a hammer, like a saw. Or they were hobbyists, enthusiasts, probably more like you, Rich, and like playing games, or they bought a computer so they could type in programs, that kind of thing. They loved it. They were enthusiasts. Said, let's make that the distinction. We'll do call for help for the set that thinks the computer's a tool. They have to use it at work. They want to know how to use it. That, you know, it's much more serious. It's all about word processing, spreadsheets. And then in the evening, we'll do the show, The Screensavers. It'll be for the enthusiast.
I mean, that's actually a pretty smart delineation.
It worked at the time. I think that distinction has disappeared now.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of merged now at this point. I mean, I still get that, though. A lot of people are like, I have to use this for my work. It's like I have a phone. Nowadays, I just feel like people have technology because it's everywhere. And so they use it no matter what.
So kids are the enthusiasts now, but then they come to it sometimes through gaming, but sometimes through Snapchat or Instagram or Facebook, that kind of thing. So it is, I guess, still somewhat true, but it was definitely true back then because it was all new.
So when Tech TV started, I sent my resume there pretty much every week to, I believe the woman's name was Aliyah Kelly. Does that name ring a bell?
Yeah, I don't think she existed. I don't know that person.
Anyway, whoever it was.
Had you called me, I might have given you a better name.
I should.
Anyway, what did they say? You're a talented, good-looking guy.
My gosh.
What was your...
Leo, this was when I was... It was like I didn't even do tech. I just knew I loved technology. I was a reporter.
Well, you were 12 or something. How old were you?
I don't... It was pretty young. I mean, it was in right out of college, I think.
Okay.
And I just kept sending them, you know, my tapes from, like, being a reporter. Long story short, I'll never forget this woman. You know, she said, okay, we're getting close. You're warming up to us, or we're warming up to you. And then all of a sudden, Tech TV just closed up shop like the next day. Like, it was just over.
We're warming up to you. Bye.
Yeah. See you later.
You go to the door and they're gone.
Isn't that what happened to that place? It just closed overnight. And that's what made you want to sort of do your own thing after that.
Welcome to broadcasting, Rich. This was a very important lesson you learned.
Yeah.
It's for people who think, oh, yeah, I would love to do this. Man, it is, especially in the old days when there were gatekeepers. It was hard to, you had to be very persistent. Yeah. So Tech TV, they were for sale starting around early 2004. We knew that, you'd kind of gather this because you'd see groups of Japanese businessmen walking through, getting the tour from the boss, and you'd go. At the time, it was owned by Paul Allen, who was one of the Microsoft founders, one of the richest men in the world. He was a multi-billionaire. So we thought, well, we're safe. But he was losing a lot of money. I think he was losing, like, remember I said $50 million a year? That's kind of what he was losing.
Oh, wow.
So even a billionaire doesn't like to lose $50 million a year. So he was looking for a seller. He talked to SoftBank, which is a big Japanese firm and investor firm who ended up buying Ziff Davis. They were interested. He talked to Sony. They were interested. But the high bidder, and this was about April of 2004, ended up being Comcast. So I, in January, sensed this, and that's when I went back to radio. I had stopped doing radio when I was doing a call for help in the screensavers. I was working 5 days a week. I didn't want to work the weekends too. So I just stopped for about 6 years, 1998 to 2004. But I had the sense, and kind of nicely, that's when Robin Bertolucci from KFI called me in January 2004 and said, we're losing our PC guy. I worked with her at KGO, and she said, would you like to do this? I said, well, I'm in Northern California. She said, that's fine. You can do it from Northern California. I said, yes, I'd love to do it. So I was working 7 days a week, but I knew that this was my fallback plan. It was a pretty good fallback plan because in April, I got called into the office of the new program director of Tech TV. His name was Vinny Longobardo. Vinny Longobardo, come in, close the door. And I said, oh, crap. Vinny said, Leo, I love you. I love you. I think you're great. That, by the way, I have to point out that Screensavers and Call for Help were the only successful shows on Tech TV.
Oh, yeah. People still know those.
They created those shows because they wanted to fill time. They spent a lot of money on other shows thinking these are going to be the big hits. The cheap show with Leo answering phone calls, the radio show with pictures, that's the one everybody watched. I mean, it wasn't millions of people. I'm not saying it was a hit or anything, but of all the shows on the network, those were the ones that were making money. He said, we love you, but we're firing basically, he didn't say this, but this is the fact, they're firing everybody over 40 because technology is a young man's game. So, and he did the same thing Halsey did to me. He said, but I've been talking to our affiliates up in Canada, and they love Call for Help. Why don't you call them? So I called Rogers, which is the big cable company in Canada, and they said, yeah, we want to keep doing Call for Help. They're closing it. Comcast bought it. They moved the channel down to Los Angeles. They took the screensavers. They renamed it to the what did you call it? The eponymous attack of the show. I don't know.
Oh,
there's no
right.
excuse for this name. It's the worst name ever. I don't even know what it means. The attack of the show. It's faux hip. The guy that was running Tech TV, Charles Hirschfeld, spectacularly flamed out. They renamed it G4 TV.
Right. Okay. G4. That was right. Okay.
Yeah. And he spectacularly flamed out and then went on to run a cable channel for older people, like a senior citizen channel, which also flopped, which will give you some idea of his grasp of the youth culture. So
he went from technology to senior citizen programming.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't think he's working in the business anymore. Anyway, so they fired me, but the Canadian guy, so I would go to Canada once a month and do 15 shows in 4 days of Call for Help. I did that for years. But then again, I'm in the same position where I'm working 4 days a month. This is around 2004, and I'm doing the radio show. So I'm working weekends and 4 days a month, so 12 days a month. And I should have just rested on my laurels. I should have said, this is a good schedule. I can work 12 days a month. But no, I said, why don't I do this new thing that's coming along called podcasting? I could do a podcast in the other 18 days a month. Why not? And that's when we started podcasting. I started podcasting the tech guy first. KFI very generously said, yeah, you know, they didn't know what podcasting was. Sure, you want to take the radio show, make it a podcast, be our guest. And then I brought back the old Tech TV gang, and we first called it the Revenge of the Screensavers until we got a cease and desist letter from Mr. Hirschfeld and or Hirschhorn, Hirsch something. Anyway, it hurt, and we said can't call it the Revenge of the Screensavers. So I cast around for a name, and I thought, well, we'll call it TWIT because it could stand for This Week in Tech, which is serious, but it could also be kind of tongue in cheek. We're twits. People to this day send me emails saying, you know what twit means in the UK? And I said, yes, I do. That was the whole idea. It was self-deprecating humor. I thought it was, you know, you don't want to take yourself too seriously.
And so okay.
That's how that network was born.
And at TWIT, you took everything you had learned from all these other jobs and all these other stations, and you kind of took the best of what they did because you started creating programming. I mean, I assume you had the first show for a while and then you kind of branched off and built up other shows.
Exactly.
But it wasn't something where you threw like $50 million a year at. It was something that...
Well, so you nailed the lesson that I learned is that it's expensive and probably dumb to go on cable. But this is 2004. What do we have in 2004? We have the internet. It cost... Poor Paul Allen, more than $300 million to get to 41 million households on cable systems all over the country. Because the way cable works, you have to go to each town with a bag of cash and say, can you please carry our network? $300 million later, he's in 41 million homes in the United States. Instantly, I put up a podcast that's on the internet. And instantly, 2 billion people can hear it. Instantly, for nothing. So the economics of it were pretty obvious. I knew there was an audience. You know, I was constantly talking to the folks at Tech TV. I was saying, look, you're doing ESPN. You're doing a sports channel, but it's for geeks instead of sports enthusiasts. ESPN doesn't say, oh, we know you're not interested in football, but we're going to kind of do this and explain, you know, you make a show for sports enthusiasts. Why is Tech TV, we were running cops overnight. We were running puppet shows because they didn't feel like the tech enthusiast, they didn't trust the tech enthusiast. I said, there's 14 million programmers in the US. If you just drill, if you super serve geeks, you'll do great. But they never trusted that. So when I started the podcast network, I said, look, we're gonna be smart. And we're not gonna dumb it down, and we're gonna aim for people who are tech enthusiasts because that's the best audience for us. So that's all we've ever done. We've never tried to make it so-called accessible, or we never tried to dumb it down. The radio show, you know, is for a general audience, so that's what I do on KFI. Mm-hmm.
I was gonna say there is a little bit of a difference there because it is a lot of drive-by folks. I mean, a lot of folks tune in, but it is a lot of drive-by folks.
It's like your work at KTLA. You don't want to. Say stuff that leaves people out.
Right.
But when you're doing a podcast, especially in the early days, the people who are listening to podcasts are, believe me, they know tech because it's hard to get a podcast. They have to figure this all out. So you can do a show that's unabashedly technology focused. And that was a great audience for us. Still is, because those people are not well served by any other media. And they really have a desire to know and talk about it. And that was the success of Tech TV. And I bet you for you, this is true too, is that here you are a geek and you're in the early 2000s and you don't know a lot of geeks, but there's a station on a television station full of geeks doing geeky things. That makes you feel good. It makes you feel cool. It makes you feel like, yeah, I'm not alone. And that's, I think, to this day, that's the reason people listen to the podcast is because, yeah, we're geeks and we're proud of it.
I remember when Sirius and XM were two different companies? I remember the reason why I chose to go with XM is because they had a 24/7 tech network. I can't remember if it was called, it might have been CNET, it might have been Ziff Davis or ZD Radio or something like that. But that's why I went with XM over Sirius because Sirius didn't have that channel. And then, of course, they merged.
Yeah. And people and killed the channel, by the way.
Yeah, and they killed the channel immediately. That was the first thing they did.
First thing they do. Yeah.
Why do tech channels always get killed for some reason? It's like it's like nobody wants, like you said, nobody wants to trust the nerds and the geeks in the world that like love this stuff. I mean, there's 15, 20, 30 channels dedicated to sports on my, you know, DirecTV now, but there's zero for tech. And I think that's why Twit has been successful, is because people do seek it out. And especially nowadays with the on-demand economy, you can seek out exactly what you want to hear about. If you like Android, you can listen to an Android podcast. If you like iOS, you can listen to iOS. Where do you stand? I want to get your thoughts on that, because you play with everything, obviously, kind of like me. Tell me about your thoughts on iOS versus Android.
You know, I go back and forth. You know, some days, well, it's not days, some months, or even years, I'm saying, oh yeah, iOS has the upper hand. Right now, my kind of favorite phone, my daily driver, is an Android phone. It's the Samsung Galaxy S10 Plus.
Interesting.
Love the screen. It's a great processor. The reason I prefer Android is because it's more configurable. I can, and it took me weeks to get it just so, but I got it just so. There are a lot of people in the world who don't care about configuring their phone, who don't want to get it just so. They just want to use it. For them, iOS is a better choice. I kind of reject the conventional wisdom that iOS is more secure than Android. I don't think that's actually the case, and I can cite lots of examples. Most recently, people with iPhones were hacked because of a flaw in WhatsApp. Apple doesn't have full control of the ecosystem. If you put an app on the iPhone and that app has a flaw, you could be compromised just as much as anybody on any other phone. So I don't think it's inherently more secure, although a lot of security experts will say, oh, I'd never carry Android. I think if you know what you're doing, Android is no less secure. So security is not the issue to me. But if somebody calls me up and doesn't know or says, you know, I just want a phone, I'll always say iOS.
Yeah. I kind of, I mean, I,
if you're a geek, I think Android's a good choice. How do you feel? What do you think?
I was wondering if you kind of were in line with me in that aspect, is that Android has always appealed to me because I can do whatever I want. My phone is my own, right? But iOS, I mean, I wrote the book a couple of like last year about.
Yes, your book is great.
Thank you. But I wrote the book, you know, about the iPhone, and it was kind of like, not that I mean, I've always used the iPhone, right? But my personal preference always leaned towards Android. But then when I wrote this book, it took me, you know, I did a deep dive because a lot of the questions I get are about the iPhone. And I kind of fell in love with the iPhone because I'm like, wow, all these things that I had worked so hard to download this app and figure out this and tweak my Android this way, iPhone has it all built in. I'm like, what's going on here? And so I kind of have been using the iPhone, but I still love the idea of Android being my phone versus Apple's phone. You know what I mean?
I carry them both. And partly that's because, just like you, I have to answer questions about the iPhone. But I think there's a lot to be said for both.
They're both fantastic.
It's much like the old debate, Windows versus Mac.
Right.
It's a personal computer. In fact, there's no more personal computer than your smartphone. So do what you like. There's no right or wrong answer in that respect.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the problem of the you know, you hear iPhone is this and Android and people that are my thing is, I love this, and I'm sure this happens to you, is when you talk about something, if you like it, oh, now you're an iPhone fanboy, and if you like these, if you talk about Samsung, now you're a Samsung fanboy. Yeah. You know, it's like, no.
My rule of thumb is, if I get complaints from both sides, and I do, then I'm doing the right thing. People say you're an Apple fanboy. Why do you hate Apple so much? I get both sides. So that's good. That means I'm right down the middle. Like, yes, I don't know. My attitude, and I think it's really an important attitude, is not to play favorites or not to take sides, but to call it as I see it. I think I do, you know, one of the reasons I do what I do is I think we as users need to have representation in the tech world. I think these tech companies really kind of take it on themselves to do whatever they want. And I think users need to stand up for themselves. I come from an era where there was never support. You'd get software in a baggie with maybe if you're lucky, a mimeographed 4-page manual. Nowadays, you don't even get that. You don't even get the manual. Nicely packaged, but no manual. So it's always been the case that users have had to kind of help themselves. And so in my era, we had things called user groups. They're still around, but they're not as common as they were. And so I think of what I do as kind of a user group of the airwaves. I do a user group for all the people were trying to figure out how to use this. I got a call yesterday on Sunday on the radio show from an 80-year-old woman. We finally figured out, it took me half an hour. I actually kept her on after the show to help her out, that she had a teenage grandson who had downloaded a bunch of adware onto her Mac. Mm. And at first I made the mistake. I think probably a lot of people would have, oh, she's a little old lady, an 80-year-old woman. But as I'm talking to her, I'm getting the idea. Well, she kind of knows what she's talking. And then she said, yeah, I used to be a Fortran programmer for NASA.
Oh, wow.
She wrote software to figure out high energy particles, how much they would impact the space station. So how thick the shielding had to be. So I realized, oh boy, what did I get? Did I misjudge?
Grandma knew a thing or two.
Grandma knew a lot, but, and this is the real point, as technical as she was, as smart as she was, she still was stuck with this, what's going on with my computer? And that's why we all need to help each other. And the companies don't do it. I mean, she could have brought it into, you know, the Apple store or the Geek Squad, and maybe they would have done the right thing, but maybe not. Maybe she'd get back and her hard drive would be erased and she'd say, what happened? So I feel for people. I think it's hard these days. My wife says you can't die because if you do, I won't be able to turn the TV on because I don't know the secret incantation for the 5 remotes on our coffee table.
Oh, yeah.
At my house, that one, don't
well,
you?
I have the rule. My wife cracks up because she is now at ease with the fact that our tech changes in our home like every 3 to 6 months. Yep. Because I'm testing something new, right?
Yeah.
The way you get to understand these products is you have to use them. And I remember when I started testing phones, I'd go to like these, you know, events and, you know, South By, whatever, and I'd talk to other phone reviewers and I'd run into them. I'd be like, is there an easier way than like setting up this entire phone, putting my SIM card in it? They're like, no. That's what you have to do. You have to be able to play with these things and use them on a daily basis to figure right. out the little kind of quirks and features and all that kind of stuff. And I will say, I think you're probably better at Windows than I'll be honest. I use a MacBook and I really have let my Windows knowledge go to waste because I just
come and go on that one. I can't bring myself to Windows is just awful. And I think even Microsoft, don't tell anybody this, but it's very apparent that even Microsoft thinks so. And they will never say this, but I just want to point out that they announced a couple of weeks ago that Windows is now going to come with a Linux kernel in it, which is a different operating system, a much, in my opinion, better operating system. And I think this is the beginning of the end. I think Microsoft finally said, okay, we're going to get rid of this thing. It's just an albatross around our neck. All the money we make in the cloud. Let's just get rid of this. Let's replace it with Linux. You watch 3 years, 4 years from now, it'll be the new Windows Linux. Then it'll just be Linux.
Wow.
I guarantee you. The truth is there is one true operating system. Now we're getting geeky. Just you and me, Rich. Nobody else.
Sure.
Just you and me. There was one true operating system. It's called Unix. Linux is a variant of Unix. Mac OS is a variant of Unix. Windows is an outlier. Even Android is Linux. Mac, the iOS, the iPhone is Linux. It's BSD. It's a Unix. So one of these things is not like the others, and that's Windows. And bless Microsoft, because in the 90s, Windows made, really the whole computer revolution happened because Windows was a stable platform that people could write software for, people could learn, and they could use a computer. But those days are long gone. Mm-hmm. And the one true operating system, which is Unix, and Unix and its flavors will rule them all. And I think it's just a matter of time. Even Microsoft knows that.
I love it. We'll end on that. The bold prediction from Leo. And I think...
That's geeky, baby.
It is geeky. We left on a geeky note. So tell folks who are listening that may not listen to the podcast where they can find This Week in Tech.
Well, there's this thing called the internet you might have heard about. Get your iPod. And don't get your iPod. If you go to the website, twit.tv, TWIT stands for This Week in Tech, .tv, not .com, .tv. All the shows are there. But you know what's great, and this is why podcasting, I think, is having a renaissance. You can also ask your Amazon Echo. You can ask your Google Assistant. You can say, hey, you know who. Oh, I'm sorry.
You activated it.
My Echo just woke up. You know what I did? Because I don't use the A word on the air.
Right.
But I foolishly named my A word Echo in here, and now it's talking to me. Anyway, you know who I'm talking about. Say, Echo, listen to TWIT. And it'll play the podcast, or play TWIT, or play TWIT live, and it'll play the podcast. And it's about to do that, so I apologize.
That's like a next level pro tip, by the way. I don't think I think a lot of people don't. I mean, I think that some people realize that, but I think when you ask your iPhone or even Android to play a podcast, and you see how easy it is to just listen
so
to
easy.
That, and this is what's crazy to me. It's like this is going to happen. I mean, it's already happening in the car.
That's the revolution.
It's unbelievable.
Rich, when podcasting started in 2004, I always said it will not be a success until it's as easy as pushing the button on your car radio, that you just hit the button and you're listening. And it is now, thanks to these voice assistants. It's a revolution.
Leo Laporte, thanks so much for being on the show today. I do appreciate it. I learned a lot about you. We could have gone on for even longer. But
I have stories, baby.
I know. And I think that's one of the other beauties of podcasts is that you can go as long as you want, which is funny when you,
yes.
when you think about broadcasting compared to the new generation of broadcasting, like nothing is the same except for the fact that you've got people talking video, but otherwise everything's different. You know,
yeah.
You're not
on NBC. They'd give you 2.5 minutes to explain what an MP3 is. Wow.
Exactly.
I can do 2.5 hours.
Exactly. And that's also the beauty of our world right now is that on TV, on KTLA, I do a quick dive into something for 2 minutes. Look, you want more information, you go to the web, you go to the podcast, and that's also part of the fun these days.
Yeah. I love doing the KFI radio show. Tech Guy Show is very important to me because it's reaching out to normal people and helping them with this stuff that is making people crazy.
And it sure is. Believe me.
It's my goal to make people less crazy.
I agree. I think that's a great goal. Thanks so much for listening to the News Director's Office. I'm Rich DeMuro. You can find me. I have a podcast too, by the way, Rich on Tech. That's on all the podcast platforms. Thanks to Jason Ball for letting me fill in today. And of course, the most thanks to my guest today, Leo Laporte. Check out his podcast and all of his shows, twit.tv. Have a fantastic day. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.